Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Village Celebration and our special edition of the post-election analysis. Joining us is political consultant Mundell Robinson, who is also a Village Celebration contributor. Mundell, your team worked in Florida on the race. Andrew Gillum, it appears, came up short. What's the latest? There's now a recount in Florida.
Yeah, I you know what, I would like to believe that our elections in this country are free and open. And there's a couple things about Florida that brings pause to me about, for me, making me willing to say that Andrew came up short. Right now, we are trailing. There's a deficit for Andrew Gillum, but there's been a triggering of a recount. But there's also some issues that we need to address as it pertains to the vote and those that did vote in Florida. And part of that is ballots, provisional ballots that haven't been counted, and then also ballots that have been left at polling places in Broward County and in other parts of Florida as well.
So it's preliminary, or at best inaccurate, to say that he came up short until you know the results of this recount. Here's what I find interesting. Rick Scott, a Republican who ran for Senate, called for the recount. Explain what happened.
Yeah, so I feel like Scott had to call for a recount. One, he's the sitting governor, and then also he's trying to save face in case there is a recount. A runoff. And trying to make sure there's distance between him and what he knows will be the wrath of the voters that's going to come from what's happening in Florida's neighboring state, Georgia. And he's trying to distance himself from Kemp. And that's a good thing, but it's also political play to think that Rick Scott supports the idea that, you know, a recount needs to happen. This is political tactics. To make himself look softer and more acceptable to the voters of Florida.
So you mentioned Georgia. Let's move north to Georgia, where Stacey Abrams has not conceded. Brian Kemp, the Republican, who is also the Secretary of State, has resigned as Secretary of State, and it's quite possible they may end up in a runoff. What would your strategy be for the Abrams campaign at this point?
So right now, the Abrams campaign, I know, are spending a lot of time and energy and also resources to make sure they talk to every voter that has a provisional ballot or that has a mailed-in ballot to ensure that they've been mailed in. But there's a few problems in Georgia that make Georgia extremely difficult to say that even if Stacey Abrams fell short, that the election is a loss, simply because you had it, like you said, the former Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, who resigned just a couple days ago, doing a lot of things that are questionable. One, on the eve of the election, he puts out a statement saying that the Democratic Party tried to hack the state's electorate. That has been proven false. There's no grounds. Nobody is willing to there's no investigation happening. He said there was an investigation into that. That's a sign or a effort to suppress the vote. Secondly, this is a candidate who is also an elected official who had been rebuked twice by federal courts, saying that what he was doing and what he was trying to do was illegal and also unconstitutional. This is not me talking or me saying. This is the court saying that what his actions were unconstitutional. Keep that in mind now. He's also a person who's told a group of Republican donors that if everybody that supports Stacey Abrams exercised their right to vote, it would be a problem. Your job as the Secretary of State is to ensure that as many people that are eligible to vote do vote. For you to say that it's a problem that they're voting is questionable. Then there's other things that his office is doing that lends to the fact that there may be something unscrupulous happening. Right now, there are more than 43,000 votes that are uncounted in Georgia. That's dangerous because in Georgia, you only need 23,000 for there to be a recount and about 25,000 for there to be a runoff. His office, the Secretary of State office, is not releasing where those 43,000 uncounted votes are, which county they are in, and who those voters are. That information right now, the Abrams campaign is trying to figure it out by sending out tons of volunteers and also staff members to every county in the state to figure out who has a ballot, a provisional ballot that hasn't been counted or hasn't been applied. There's also been some rumbling for students from HBCUs, both in the state and also out of the state. Notably, is a group of black women in that were students at Howard that said that they got together. They all are witnesses for other voters, the other voters, that they sent in their absentee ballot and did everything correctly and make sure they had an adequate amount of stamps. And those none of those votes have been counted as a part of those who voted. So all of this is happening. And then there's also someone from there are black women from Spelman that are saying the same thing, that their votes haven't been counted. They're checking the website and their provisional ballots aren't been applied to the vote. So all of this is happening, and then this person, Brian Kemp, is declaring victory. As a Secretary of State, or former Secretary of State, because, like I said, he resigned a couple days ago, you have to be weary of all of this. And Georgia is further away from a conclusion than is Florida, I believe, because of all of this.
So how long can this drag on?
Well, like we saw in 2000 with the Bush v. Gore case, the Abrams campaign is rightfully doing the work of ensuring that every vote in Georgia is counted. So while the Constitution calls for a runoff by December 4th to determine who the governor, the legal ramifications of this could be a lot longer, especially when people that requested absentee ballots were supposed to get their absentee ballots a month ago, but because of some inadequate system in Georgia, some people just received their absentee ballot in the end of October, almost November. That's problematic.
There certainly are a lot of questions to be answered in Georgia. And Brian Kemp, as you said, has resigned, but he's also declared himself the governor-elect, saying the math is on his side.
Mm. And the tragedy about that is, you know, like, to be so bold and say the math is on your side when you're not sharing that math with anybody else. To be so bold and say that the math is on your side when you know hundreds and thousands of people walked away when you had black counties that had predominantly black voters, machines not working, and they walked away and left the poll. Tell those voters who showed up with their kids or who left work early to stand in line for hours and not able to vote that the math is on your side and that their vote didn't count. To be so bold to say that is telling in itself.
What is a voter's recourse in a situation like this?
Suits. And these voters become plaintiffs in cases against the state of Georgia about stealing their franchisement. And it's already happening, both from the Abrams campaign and then also from other organizations, civic organizations, and also concerned citizens by themselves are filing suits already, not just against their county board of elections, but also against the state itself.
Let's talk about disenfranchisement, which African Americans have faced historically. It looks different, but it is not any different than it was decades ago.
Mm.
As a consultant, when you are charting a strategy for a candidate, how do you prepare for this type of interference in the vote?
Yep. So the most important thing, as what we're learning is some of the people on the other side of the aisle are willing to do anything to win. And it's also evident that expanding the electorate is not a part of their strategy to victory. So as a consultant, what I tell my candidates is there are two things that you must do. You must spend a lot of resources on expanding the electorate, meaning talking to low information or infrequent black and brown voters to turn them out in droves. And then also spend another amount of resources to educate them on what voter suppression looks like, even if it's not blatant. People saying you can't vote. There are other ways, like we saw tactics in Georgia and North Carolina this cycle where they were setting up roadblocks. The police officers were setting up roadblocks within a mile of polling locations, black polling locations. So telling people that the way you can counter this is voting early, not trying to go to the polls on election day, because these things do happen. Also letting people know what their rights are as it pertains to provisional ballots. And if you don't show up with an ID, how you still have a right to vote, and then you can cue your ballot later. So making sure that the candidate and their campaign are aware of all types of voter suppression, and they're educating the voters that they're talking to these types of tactics to prepare themselves for these actions when they happen and how they're reported to the proper sources.
It seems that the more organizations like Black Voters Matter work and organize, the more tactics there are to overcome. What's your take on it?
America and white supremacy has never lost what they want. We need to be cognizant of that. It seems like a dark statement to make. This vote, the idea that the vote or voting for Black people will ever be easy, is a myth that we should not buy into, yet we should still fight for it as much as possible and as hard as possible.
Are you particularly discouraged after this election in terms of the efforts to suppress voters, African-American voters specifically?
I'm actually not discouraged. I'm actually encouraged. The number of young folk voted. This is a midterm election, and they have record numbers. I mean, numbers that rival presidential election years. So I feel like baby boomers can rest assured that the millennial, which is now the largest voting bloc in this country, are definitely in ready to take their place as a voting population, a voting generation. And I'm excited about the idea that the youth are paying attention. They're voting in higher numbers. Minorities are participating at higher levels. And I'm excited about that. I'm not discouraged at all. I do know that we're combating a system that is old and entrenched, but I'm also knowing that people are paying attention in ways that are unseen. And pollsters are wrong on a regular occasion because they're not counting on these people that are not normal voters to vote in the way that they are. And that means a whole lot to the work that I do. And it's also uplifting knowing that people are not being turned off from democracy, because democracy doesn't work when people don't participate. We need a large portion of people to vote in order for democracy to be democracy.
Can you
It's not a state, it's an action.
Can you identify a turning point in this election or within the past 2 years, since 2016, that galvanized voters? Is there one thing, or you think there have been several things that...
Not one thing, one person, Donald Trump. I think I feel like if Hillary Clinton had won the presidential election, don't get me wrong, I'm not making light of the troubles that come along with Donald Trump's presidency, but I feel like if Hillary Clinton would have been president, a lot of the excitement that exists or the anxiety that exists that's forcing people to poll would not have been there. People would have been known and rocked to sleep. We have a presidency that, or a president that is at least half cognizant of what's important to vote. And that could have been dangerous to the number of voters that we've seen. But this increase is definitely related to Donald Trump being president.
We'll take a break and come right back. Joining us today is Mondale Robinson, political consultant.